I also want to know that sometimes that call to action and sometimes that quote unquote sale is not, hey, buy this thing. Sometimes that sell that we're doing is take this action.
Welcome to Small Business BS, the podcast designed to ignite your entrepreneurial spirit through thought-provoking ideas and actionable business strategies. Each week, entrepreneurs Adam Whitmer and Jeff Gargis dive into creative marketing hacks, proven sales methods, and clever growth strategies. Get ready to unlock the full potential of your business with insights that are both fun and impactful. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Gargis and Adam Whitmer.
Welcome to episode 31 of the Small Business BS podcast. I'm Adam Whitmer, and I'm here with my co-host, Jeff Gargis. In today's episode, we're going to pick up right after where we left off from episode 30. In episode 30, we talked about 10 email marketing mistakes. And for here, for episode 31, we're going to talk about 10 more email marketing mistakes. We realized towards the end of the episode that we had plenty of mistakes to discuss. And in the beginning of the episode, we discussed why it's important to have email marketing done well. And therefore, we decided that what we were going to do was talk about some mistakes to avoid. And so we went through 10 mistakes to avoid in episode 30. And here we're picking it back up on episode 31. Now, Jeff, can you remind us what was the final thing that you talked about for our 10th email marketing mistake to avoid that left a little bit of a cliffhanger last week? Can you remind our audience
So the 10th one was only emailing when you want to sell something. And you said you were going to disagree with me. And we were starting this episode on a disagreement. And so I'm here. I brought my shield, my sword. I'm like ready for battle. I don't think it's going to be that big of a disagreement because a lot of times I agree with your disagreements. So you said you were going to disagree. So are you going to start number one with something that you think goes against with that? Or is that what you're talking
about? Yeah. I'll call it number 11.
Number 11. Yes. Number 11.
So for number 11, for number 10, you said this, you know, always trying to sell something. For number 11, I say always try to sell something.
To be fair, I did not say that the mistake was always trying to sell. I said that the mistake was only emailing when you think you have something to sell. That's different.
Well, now I have to spin this so it sounds like a true disagreement.
Go ahead. I'll let you do it.
So I'm going to say a mistake is not always trying to sell something. And so what I've seen in some newsletters is people will spend a ton of time, but there's no call to action. There's no in-game strategy on what they're trying to accomplish, at least not from reading the emails perspective. And at the end of the day, our email marketing campaigns should be trying to sell something. Unless we are a nonprofit organization that doesn't need to raise money, that just is trying to create awareness. If we're a business, and most nonprofits are trying to raise money and create loyalty, but if we're a business that's in the business of making money, we are trying to sell something at the end of the day. Now, there's a lot of different ways to get that. You can get that through brand awareness. You can get that through connecting with the audience and people liking you. I know a lot of influencers who make a lot of money just because people like them. And so, but at the end of the day, there's a bottom line that's trying to be accomplished. So I think it's important to be trying to sell something. And I've seen a lot of email marketers make mistakes where they're afraid to directly ask for the sale. If you're a true business that has a store and you sell things, don't be afraid to sell them. I found in my business that when I have a sales email, when I send out a sales email that's a direct solicitation for somebody to purchase something that I'm offering, that's when I make sales. And if I don't send a direct solicitation on something that I'm offering for sale, I don't make sales. And so I've seen a direct correlation to offering something for sale in an email and getting a return sale because of that. And so I've told a number of people, we're in a mastermind together, Jeff, and I've brought this up before where some of our peers, I've told them, I said, look, you should try sending more sales emails, because if you're not asking for a sale, you're not going to be getting sales in return unless you have an amazing funnel. But a lot of times funnels are so complicated, people fall off the funnel before they get all the way there. So having that direct sale is something worth trying and testing. You don't want to scare your audience off, But a few unsubscribes is okay. But it's important to be having a direct plan to make sales at the end of the time. So Jeff, that really wasn't a disagreement. I doubt it. But
yeah, I love you, buddy, and I know you were trying to disagree, but I like 1,000% agree with you. And actually, literally number two on my list that we didn't get to, it was on my initial list from last episode, was not having a clear CTA. Like literally, because you have to have that. And I think the important part that
what does CTA mean?
Call to action. Sorry, you use call to action, right? And I think, yes. I think the key here, and if you like, what one of the big things, and I'm actually going to go, so this will be number 12, right? Is, you kind of already alluded to this, but so I'm going to kind of harp on that, is like, is use an overly salesy or spammy language. Now, I want to make sure that that is also not a disagreement in what Adam just said, because if you heard what Adam was saying, was a clear call to action, a strategy for how to sell, and asking for the sale. He didn't say be spammy, be salesy, be whatever. He's just saying, do not be afraid to ask for the sale. And do not be afraid to mention the fact that you have something or you want them to do something. I also want to know that sometimes that call to action and sometimes that quote unquote sale is not, hey, buy this thing. Sometimes that sell that we're doing is take this action, which could be supporting my cause, which could be following, going and liking my YouTube channel, which could be downloading this other thing that gives me more information on you so I can sell you later. Or it could be purchase my stuff. And it was interesting you said the influencer side. I'm like, yeah, influencers are selling, but what they're selling is different. What they want you to do is follow them, to engage with their content, to comment, that type of stuff, because that's what helps them make money from brand deals and creator funds and things of that nature. It's still a sale, and they have to be willing to say, hey, if you like what I'm saying or whatever, click the follow button or share this with a friend. That's their sell, right? In our world, it might be, hey, buy this thing, go do this go to take this online course, or it might be come into my shop and get your bike fixed or whatever, right? You cannot be afraid to do that. So I think that's key. But being overly salesy or having spammy language and never providing any value, that's not a strategy. That's not going to work. That used to work. Doesn't work anymore. You've got to build the connection. You've got to build it up, but you cannot be afraid to sell. So it kind of goes along with, I think when you said it, Adam, it hit me. I'm like, I'm going next with this because you use the word strategy and strategic approach to it. I think that's key. And part of your strategy should be not to sound like a used car salesman. No offense to any of my used car salesman friends. I'm talking about like the old ones from the movies. So that's number 12.
Number 12. That's great. That's great. Speaking of used car salesman, I'll go with number 13. Don't use all caps too much. So unless you are a used car sales dealership from 1997, don't use all capitalization too much. All caps will catch attention, but in today's day and age, it feels like you're being screamed at. And cars, car dealerships, since we're talking about that, do that. Dollar, 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 come buy now, and all those types of things. We're typically not going to have a business that's doing that. And so using all caps in your subject line, all caps in your email is probably too much. Now, there's different ways to differentiate. You can do a shorter paragraph so that they're single sentences to accentuate what you're doing. You can add bold. You can add colored fonts. There's different ways. You can add bullet points to get your point across. But I think using all caps too much, especially in your subject line, is probably not ideal. Now, some caps in the subject lines have proven to be beneficial. And I've listened to podcasts where people study subject lines left and right, and they say what's working, what's not working. So if you know something that is working, don't not do it. But I think we can use all capitalization too much. So that would be number 13, Jeff, is to not use capitalization too much.
Yeah. And to do other, like if I've actually read multiple studies and around subject lines, and having an all caps, like all literally all caps subject line, is one of the quickest ways to get hit by spam and get and not even get your emails delivered. Like, it's a terrible practice. Don't ever do it. But to Adam's point, that one word might need a capital, right? And stuff like that. One of the things that I have more recently, and I don't know why, but in the last little year or so, actually using, I've always been a pretty firm believer of like my subject line should feel like I'm writing to you as a friend. But it's been, and actually, I think this is from that subjectline.com. I should have looked up his name. Anyway, I think it's from their team that actually was doing this study around that capitalizing your first letter. So almost like you were writing like a book title, even when it's a person, like a more personal feel email, actually perform better. Not sure how long that's going to last, but like for a while now it has. And we've seen that actually with ours too. When I changed that, our open rates went up. Anyway, yes, don't use caps. All right. So that was number 13. Number 14, using templates that feel just generic and overused or kind of cold and not personalized. And I'm not saying you can't use a template. It's great to have a template. You can use one of the templates that's available in your email service provider, like your platform. That's fine. You can have templated emails. And if you're going to send a very regular email and you want to have certain parts of it, having a template is great. That's what I'm talking about, right? Our Educator Club newsletter has a template. I share some sort of story or lesson. Then there's my signature or like a note from me. And then there's a podcast that we recommend, three sources of information or tips or whatever. And then I create it like a creating prompt. Like it's templated, but it's not like, I don't know how to say this without sounding like a jerk. It doesn't feel like a 2007 Constant Contact template, if that makes sense. So you got to make sure that whatever, however you template, however you format, however you structure, design your email, like really do some research on it. Because when it comes in my inbox, if it feels like that old templated newsletter I used to get from JCPenney's, like, it's not going to work well. And if you're trying to build authentic relationship and it's like structured and like has frames and stuff, like it just might not look well. Now, if you're going with a little more structured corporate feel, then that's different. So really take the time to, so I guess maybe the actual mistake here is not taking the time to research and choose the right format and template for your email.
I love that you said 2007 JCPenney's or 2007 Constant Contact. So things change over time. And I think it's important to understand the times and to make sure that the emails are up to date, the templates are up to date, and it's resonating with our audience. So piggybacking on that, Jeff, I think for number 15, I want to say, let's not write novels, let's write emails. And sometimes we have a great story we want to tell. We end up going long and we're a bit long-winded, but long emails work. They do. Long form content works, but an email is something that people are checking in between breaks. They're checking in between meetings. They're checking sometimes at a stoplight. And so it's important to understand that emails have to be skimmable. Emails have to have the skimmability piece to them, and they should be written different than an epic blog post. And so if you're right, that's probably better put on a blog. And in your email, you can reference the blog post, and the email can be a summary that drives people to that. But the email itself doesn't need to be a novel. A novel needs to be somewhere else. And so I think it's important to remember that. Remember, the emails have a specific purpose that is different than a blog post, and people are checking email after email. I don't have time to read an email that takes me more than just a quick minute. Unless it's extremely important, unless it's something that I asked you to send me, when I'm checking an email that's unsolicited, if it's more than just a quick skim, it's not going to entice me. Now, if I'm skimming on it and I see a blog post that piques my interest, I will click on the blog post, then I will take time to read it. But I think it's important to understand the difference between novels and writing appropriate emails. So that's number 15.
I'm going to disagree, but not really. This is another one of our not real disagreements. It's more of an add to that, because I think that's 100% yes, unless the way in which you pitch your email to people is that it's a long form email. And there are some that do that. And there are a couple, I cannot think of the guy's name, which is terrible. Obviously, I'm not doing a good job of becoming a fan. But his whole thing is that he writes essays. Like, he refers to them as essays. They're long. And he writes them on his blog, on his site, but he delivers the entire thing in the email. And right at the top, it says, hey, you can read this in my blog. But like, he's very upfront. Like, this is what I send. And his purpose is, he's like, I'm sending you the entire thing so you don't have to leave your inbox. Okay. I opted in for that. I wanted that. I'm more likely to read it. To Adam's point, though, if that is not how you are explaining to me when I'm signing up for your emails, that that's what I'm getting, 100%. Like, even if I really loved your brand, like, most likely I'm not, because I'm going to open up and be like, holy crap, Like, what do I do versus Adam's point? Well, if I skim it and then I open that up into another link, that's great. So I think it's really important. So that leads me to 16. What I'm saying is the mistake is not having clarity on what your email is and who it's for and what they're looking for specifically from your email being on your list. And that is in the sense of if I've signed up for your email list because I'm interested in coupons and discounts and all I ever get from you is life stories and sales emails, I'm probably not going to do very well as a subscriber. However, if I signed up for your email list because you told me it was going to give me a look into your world behind the scenes and all you do is sell me, it's not going to work well. You have to understand what you're trying to do, which goes back to Adam. I can't remember what it was, but Adam's used the word strategy a lot. I think that's really important here. But then also when you sell your email, your newsletter to someone, and by sell, I mean like when they opt in and however they opt in, they need to understand what they're getting. So that then when they get it, it's what they expected. And they're more likely to then now be engaged email subscribers. So number 16 is not having that clarity on what your email is supposed to be, what it's supposed to be delivering, and who it's for.
That's great. I want to piggyback on that. So for number 17, one of the mistakes we can make in email marketing is not segmenting our lists. So list segmentation is something that we can easily do. And we do this by basically saying, these people are interested in A, these people are interested in B, these people are interested in C. And so, for example, if we are, I don't know, this is probably a terrible example, but it's the first thing that comes to mind. If we're a restaurant, we're going to have some people who are interested in breakfast. We're going to have some people who are interested in vegan food, and we're going to have some people who are interested in steak. And so those three things don't overlap very well. Unless you eat steak for breakfast, then those two might overlap. But typically, I'm going to have my full dinner meal at dinner. And so if we have three different segments of breakfast, vegan food, and steak, we don't want to send a whole bunch of emails about steak to our vegans. That's going to be one of the quickest ways to get them to unsubscribe. Trust me, it's not going to work. But if we are sending breakfast people specific emails relating to our breakfast specials, the quality of our food, the orange juice that we just freshly pressed, whatever the case is, they're going to be more likely to be enticed to come in for breakfast than if we're sending them information about vegan food that doesn't relate to them because that's not the type of food that they're interested in. So again, quick off the cuff example, but I think that worked. I think it's, you know, segmenting is key because you don't want to be sending the wrong thing. You don't want to be sending a whole bunch of tech savvy emails to people who are not tech savvy and not interested in that. And so it's important to understand who you're sending to, but you can also break your list down and then make sure you're sending to your segments exactly what they want to hear. And so list segmentation is a big thing. I don't know. Did I explain list segmentation good enough, Jeff, or do you want to add anything to that?
I think you did. Yeah. I think you really wrapped up nicely with theirs. Like, make sure that you're sending the right things to the right people, right? I love that. I had segmentation on my list too, so that was awesome. I'm going to kind of continue playing off that. And for number 18 is not personalizing your emails. And this kind of rides on the back of the tailcoats of segmenting. Because I mean that both in the sense of literally having it say, hi, Jeff, right? Or however you're going to say hi to them or whatever. But also in the messages you send. So that's the segmentation that Adam's talking about, the segmentation of like making sure that I'm receiving messages that I want to receive. That's that personalization part of it, but also in the messaging of your, and how you say the things you say, how you tell your stories, how you share your products, how you make your pitches, how your call to actions look, they should feel personal. They should feel personalized that when I receive it, I feel like Adam is talking to me. He's selling me. He's pitching me. He intentionally, strategically sent me this email because it was going to bring me the value of XYZ. So personalize it both from a more technical, like making it feel personalized in the way that I receive it, but also the messaging and the messages that are sent to me are personalized for what I'm looking for from you.
So you're telling me that I can personalize mass emails that I send out to say, hey, Jeff, to you, and hey, Adam, to me, and hey, Jessica, to my wife? That's possible?
Yes. Yes, as long as you've collected that info, that information from them. So typically you should, when you're collecting email addresses for someone, like let's say a free download, you're giving away a free PDF cheat sheet or something. When I sign up for that, I should give you, at the minimum, you have to have me give you your email, but you should be collecting at least my first name and my email. You can collect additional information. There's a million studies about why you should or should not, depending on a lot of factors. But at the very least, collect your first name and their email so that I can put, and most email marketing providers, service providers have this little thing. They call it different things. It should be called personalization, but for some reason, some people call it something different. And you'll see this like almost little brackets or some set. Maybe there's an exclamation, but depending on how they write their code, and it'll say like first name or contact first name. And when you put that in there, what it will do is it was when that email was delivered to Adam, it's going to pull from Adam's record inside my email marketing platform and go, ooh, what's in the field marked first name? Oh, it's Adam. So now it's going to say, hey, Adam. But when it comes to me, it's going to say, hey, Jeff. Where this is fun is where someone fills it out incorrectly. And then it says funny, but like that's not what it is. But yes, you can do that, Adam. And actually, we could go into a whole other episode on all the ways in which you can personalize emails, which could be a lot of fun too, right? So, but yes, you should do that for sure. And yes, you can. And just for anybody wondering, Adam already knew the answer to that question, but it was nice of you to ask, so we could clarify that. I know, but that's important because I made a mistake of assuming that everyone just knew what I meant, right? So well done. Okay. But you're up now, 19.
I am. So piggybacking off of that though, it's, you know, it's fun. If somebody puts in their first name, none your business, then every email they get is none your business. And so, hey, none your business. What's up? You know? And so moving on, I'm going to try to piggyback in then to number 19 is to skip analytics, because part of what I do in analytics is we actually will look at the names that come in to see if there's any like that. And we've got a way that what we do is we will sometimes send emails that say, hey, comma, first name, or hey, first name, comma. And so if there's not a first name listed in the system, it'll just say, hey, comma. And, you know, it's not the nicest thing to say, but at least it'll say, or you say hi, and hi, nothing is better than hi, none your business or something like that. So anyway, there's ways to do that. So what I'm saying for number 19 is to look at analytics. A mistake is to skip analytics. Analytics can tell you a lot of things. In email marketing, we may have a hunch that something's working, but the numbers are what should be driving what we do. The numbers don't lie. If people are not opening emails, then we're not doing something right. If people are opening emails, then we're doing something right. So look at your analytics. Do that A-B testing that we talked about in episode 30. Make sure that we are trying to understand what's working. Look at those analytics and figure it out. And sometimes even analytics are simple things like time zones. Making sure that you're utilizing time zones on your email marketings. What I found is emails that I send between the hours of usually 8:30 and 11:30 before lunches kick in seem to have the best open rates because people are at their desk for the type of business I'm working at. I'm sending emails to bankers and credit unions. And so those are when a lot of my, in fact, it's not just me, it's my whole industry, will send the emails between that period of time because that's when people are cranking out stuff for the day. The end of the day always becomes crazy where people are putting out fires in my specific segment. And so early in the day is when people have time. And so if you use the time zone piece and your analytics tell you that emails that come at 9:30 a.m. are best, and then send all your emails at 9:30 a.m. I had somebody tell me one time, I think I was listening to I think it was a podcast, Michael Hyatt, and he was saying that 7 a.m. on Saturdays worked the best for him because his audience was doing most of their work as a side hustle, and they were high achievers, they were early risers, and so they would get up. And actually, I think he sent it at 6 a.m. because they would get up and they would check their phone. They would start their hustle before the day began. So they'd be spending a couple hours in the morning. So when he hit send at 6 a.m. on a Saturday, and you can pre-schedule this and use time zones. But when it came into somebody's inbox at 6 a.m., that was the peak time that his audience was ready to pay attention. And so he didn't just figure that out. It was analytics that told him that. So analytics are key in email marketing. So don't forget to use those for number 19.
That one's huge. And I think that's really important. Like just sort of an added asterisk to that one is that it kind of goes along with, like, don't just assume you know when your audience is going to check their emails. Like, use the analytics. And also, analytics can be a lot of things. Adam specifically mentioned, obviously, open rates and things of that nature. But, like, you have click rates, but you also have – you can collect data from your audience as well by surveying them and when they want to, what topics they like, et cetera, et cetera. You can do – we mentioned A-B testing, I think, in the last episode, right? And things of that nature to get and collect this data to figure out what is actually the best time to send, day to send, way to send, et cetera, et cetera. So yes, analytics is huge. I had that on my list as well. I'm going to pick, I have more, but we're at 20. We said 10 more in this episode. So 20 for me is trying to be someone else or not being authentic is a huge mistake. And by authentic, I mean to whatever your brand and voice is to be. And so trying to mimic someone else. And I'm not telling you to not take cues from someone else, to not look and be inspired by someone else and not see an idea and be like, oh, I love that. Like, I want to use that. That's great. I enjoy this as a reader. So I want it. I'm not telling you not to do those things, but make sure that they are then yours, that they are authentic to your brand, your voice, and are best suited for your audience. I think one of the quickest ways to get people to stop opening, reading, and or clicking your emails and doing the things in the emails and therefore not becoming a fan is by being inauthentic and trying to be something that you're not. People usually join your list for a reason. And this goes way beyond email marketing, but just in general, the authenticity is massive and it has to be felt within your emails. And I don't care if you are a local coffee shop, if you are a department store that's just putting out coupons, or if you're a mommy blogger, or if you're a travel blogger, or if you're a business trying to sell online courses, or you're whatever, you have to be authentic to whatever it is that your brand is and your voice is. And that is crucial. I think that's a huge mistake. You can do all the other things right. If you do that one wrong, it's going to hurt you. So that's number 20 for me.
I think it's really important. I know in our next couple episodes, we're going to continue the series on email marketing. I'm Jeff. I'm pulling it up here. What do we have planned? We're going to talk about some different pieces of email marketing, I think, here in the next few episodes.
We're going to talk about maybe some of the different email marketing platforms and what to look for and avoid, et cetera. We talked about maybe doing the different types of emails that you can send, and more important, like the more like different types of newsletters that you can send, the consistent emails. We discussed maybe talking about like automation, sequences, things of that nature too. So I don't know how many episodes this is going to go. This is another one of those like we didn't realize, but apparently we're doing an email marketing series now, kind of like our content marketing series. So here we go.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's great. And you know what, Jeff? I was just thinking too, one thing that we didn't mention in this list of 20, there's one more mistake that I think is important to point out, is not complying with email marketing laws. So if you are in fact using an email marketing platform, there's a couple of things you have to have. And number one is you do have to have an unsubscribe link. And so people have to be able to unsubscribe. Your email marketing platform is going to put that on there, but you also have to list an address. You have to list an address as part of your email marketing. You may say, hey, I'm just starting out. Why do I have to list an address? Because the only address I have is my house. So why do I have to do that? Well, it's law. And so a mistake is not following the law. So I think it's important to talk that out. And again, Jeff and I are not attorneys. So seek legal counsel if you need help with that, but figure out what's required and do it properly. Anything to add on that, Jeff?
No, just I guess additional law to is like you said, Sue, unsubscribe list, that you also have to have somewhere like why they're receiving the email so that if they click through, they can see what it is. So it's going to say like, you're receiving this email because you downloaded this thing and opted into our list, right? So that's what, like, that's important too, because I need to be able to go like, why is Adam sending this email? And be like, oh, okay, that's right, I remember. Or say, no, I didn't do that, and I can unsubscribe. But yes, really important. Yeah, like you mentioned, I can't remember if this episode or last episode that you mentioned the Canned Spam Act. That's like the major act that comes in. But there's also like there's some that are individual state laws or regulations, but and your email marketing service provider should make you check those boxes and should cover all that, but it's important for you to pay attention to it as well. So I guess this was 11 more.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good.
A little bonus. That was a bonus. So nothing like ending an episode with a legal disclosure, right? So, all right. So anything to add, Jeff, if we have, do we have any resources or anything you want to add? Where can people find more about you? What do you think?
No, I mean, you can always go to jeffgargas.net or follow me over on Instagram at _jeffgargas. But I think that's it. Just keep, you know, you can drop a subscribe to the podcast. If you can drop a comment and a rate and review, that'd be awesome for us. And then obviously always share with us what we can do to better support you as you grow your small business.
That's all we have for this episode of the Small Business BS Podcast. For more information on this episode and other episodes, go to smallbusinessbs.com. Until next time, have fun, be strategic, and get out there and grow your business. We'll see you all next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Small Business BS Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe and share it with fellow entrepreneurs. Until next time, keep thinking big and taking action in your business, one step at a time.